taking the software engineering, data engineering, overall, IT world by storm, which is essentially, AI and SDLC. So I would like to introduce each of our panelists one by one. I would like to start with Anand. Anand is a LLM psychologist at Stripe, formerly co-founder of Graviton, acquired by Stripe. He brings on hands-on expertise in rapid prototyping and agile experimentation. With a background spanning engineering at IIT Madras, business at IIM Bangalore, he specializes in building practical LLM-based solutions using AI code interface and private content development. He focuses on how AI tools are actively changing the day-to-day workflow of developers. Welcome, Anand. Next up, I would like to invite on stage Lakshman Pithani. Lakshman is Director for Technology Solutions at EPAM Systems. He represents the enterprise scale of AI integration. He specializes in utilizing GenAI to revolutionize the software development lifecycle across massive engineering teams. His expertise lies in AI-powered developer experience using LLMs for coding assistance, automating regression testing, and safely institutionalizing lab architectures in production environments. Welcome, Lakshman. And lastly, I would like to invite Usha Rangarajan on stage. She is the Chief of Research at Nexar Protocol and the world's first female triple cattle grandmaster. She brings significant AI research and rapid application building credentials to the group. She specializes in deep learning, GenAI, and probabilistic graphical models. Having designed data science curriculum for major universities and prototypes extensively with RAG and LLMs. And beyond her technical work, she is also a prominent advocate for neurodiversity and organized India's first neuro AI symposium. Please give a big round of applause for all of our panelists here today. So, I would like to maybe ask each one of you, what is your take briefly in a minute on how AI is revolutionizing SDLC? Let's start with you.
Sure. For me, as an AI consultant, working with large code bases is one part. And the other part is when you're prototyping, you're doing an initial prototyping for the client demo and things like that. So I predominantly work with pre-seed US clients who are yet to raise their seed fund and raise their seed and angel fund. So there we don't really work with large code bases. We start from the scratch, mostly greenfield kind of systems where we start from the scratch and we show a demo and things like that. For these kind of use cases, AI is brilliant and revolutionary. So simple example from my personal example is I deal with around 4 to 5 clients at any point of time. That's a volume of work which I take in. So until 2004, I used to have like 6 to 7 interns. Predominantly, I have from IITs, the top ones like Bombay and Chennai. And because the volume of, I want less people, 6 or 7, but the volume of work is very high. So I would spend somewhere around 3 to 3.5 lakhs as intern salaries every month until 2024. From March and April 2025 until now, I'm like saving like 60-70 lakhs in interns and fees a year. That is like really working out brilliantly for me. And just for the use cases which I deal with, which are like small prototypes and demos for clients who are raising funds, that works out brilliantly. So this is my personal experience.
That's all. So, as a technology consultant, say I talk to a lot of different large enterprise customers, and my day mostly goes into talking to these clients in terms of how AI can actually accelerate their product development cycle and release faster. And at the same time, being a software services engineering company, we also face a lot of fierce competition from other competitors in terms of competing for the same project. And we are now leveraging AI to be more competitive and bid for those projects at a maybe much higher, lower price point. And we are innovating in this space by building our own agentic solutions to actually develop these solutions faster for our clients and deliver at a much rapid pace than we were like 2-3 years back. And my day-to-day, like I am also playing product manager for some of these modernization solutions. Unlike what Madam has spoken about, ours is mostly on the brownfield side and modernization. And we are seeing a significant strides in terms of what kind of productivity AI is bringing in those areas as well, but maybe not at the pace of a greenfield kind of a scenario. So.
AI is my SDLC. I've stopped designing, I've stopped gathering requirements, I've stopped coding, I've stopped testing, I've stopped deploying. Here's roughly what it looks like right now, and I prototype a lot like you. One of my colleagues, KG, he calls, and I record the call. Then I send it to Gemini and say, tell me what he wants. Convert that into a prompt for Copilot or Codex or Claude Code. Give it to it. It generates the code. Then I have one of the other agents say, look, test it, find all the errors that you can, feed it back, and they keep talking to each other. Then I say, deploy it into the server, and it deploys it and automatically send an email to these people with an appropriate content saying this particular transcript has been deployed. And this is what I tell my team to do as well. I'm very confident to take interns, put them in front of either senior interns, say, Varun, who is still studying at IIT Madras, whom we took on as an intern, I'm confident to let him interact with Ankur, who's Stripe CEO. And they've been having interactions, and Ankur said, hey, this guy is fantastic, how is he doing it? The process is, he records the call, he feeds it to ChatGPT and gets the result. That's basically it. So unlike Yusha, my process has been the reverse. I'm hiring more interns because they don't slow down the process like experienced people.
So, I'll go to there, Anand. You know, you talked about how you are ensuring that your team is using AI as part of the overall process itself, right? But how do you ensure that AI reflects your preferences as a lead? Because sometimes you know your team better, you know who does what job better, you know who, based upon the code rep check-ins, you know what is the cycle of your check-ins around changes that happen for the report itself, right? So how do you ensure that you're reflecting your preferences for your team when you use AI? And more importantly, what's actually working? Are custom instructions working? Are shared prompts working? Are PRDs working? What is it that works best for you as part of your SDLC?
I'll start with something else that I'm doing, which is approaching this with a certain degree of humility. I'm finding that there are many areas that I don't know about that AI knows better than I do, whether it's domain or whether it's code or whether it's style of even data visualization, which I consider myself very good at. So when I see something that is different, that it's produced, it becomes a learning opportunity for me. Then I have to start thinking, okay, is this better, is this worse, and so on. Put another way, how much of my preference is good and how much of it is actually hurting, especially when the process of my applying my preference involves time and effort. So I have created one separate channel where I say, this is the person whom you need to give stuff to. You are the person who is going to try and stay out of the way as much as possible, letting AI give that stuff. So you are that channel. Let's see what happens without applying my preference. And that is therefore increasing a different kind of channel without applying my preferences, and that is growing, and I'm learning from that part. But where I have a preference, the process is review and more output review. Step one is, I've spent 1.5 seconds looking at this. This is rubbish. This is too hard for me to review. Therefore, make it more reviewed. Specifically asking for output that is easier for me to review is one step. Second is, okay, now I've taken a look at it, make this broad change, not at a level of implementation, but a level of feeling. Because AI is good at execution. What I'm left with is therefore emotion, feeling, that sort of a thing, which I'm trying to transfer both to the intern as well as to the model. Third, capturing all of these in transcripts and then having some agent look at all of this and say, what are all the things that I've said more than thrice? Take that and put it into a skill.md so that you can use it, I can use it, and then periodically review the skill.md.
Okay. So let's put, now, I'm sure you might be hiring a lot of freshers and people who are coming, graduating from MBA in a background, because there are a lot of students out there as well, right? For a junior developer, you know, who is joining the teams, you know, which are primarily, you know, starting to use AI as part of every aspect of SDLC, right? What does their career path look like, you know, when they maybe automating and doing half of their jobs itself, right? You know, will they ever write raw code as how we as developers used to do a few years back? Or will they go straight to just managing agents, for instance?
Yeah. So I think it's an evolving space currently. So in the current work day, they still write some code, but not at the same level as we used to write back in the day. But for them to produce the right kind of an output, they need to understand what AI has written. And they still need to be able to read through the code, understand it, and then maybe give feedback to the LLM in terms of, hey, this seems to be too complex for whatever solution I'm looking for. Maybe they refine it, simplify it, and so on, right? So for that, we need to understand. But what has changed significantly is, now it's no longer like, okay, I'm a Java developer, I only write Java code, or I'm a React developer, I only write React code. No, you have to be a polyglot developer, and you have to do end-to-end, not necessarily just the developer role, but you need to understand the product management, you need to understand refinement of your requirements, development, and even QA as well. And that's the level of AI due to maturity that we are inculcating in our organization. So we are trying to build that mindset, because it's a mindset shift from what we got used to. And maybe it used to be like this back in the day, like maybe a couple of decades back, we used to do end-to-end, but that has changed significantly. Now we are kind of going back in that cycle and trying to build this like a cross-cutting layer, like there is no longer a QA role, developer role, on that. And more polyglot in nature. Maybe you're not expert of every technology, every framework, but you need to know, like, okay, if I'm doing an end-to-end task, I need to be able to understand my requirements, understand the output that AI has generated, review, give the feedback, and be able to test it and then deliver it. So that's the shift that we are seeing, and even my team, like there's one guy sitting in the audience, he's doing that now. I'm forcing him to do everything end-to-end, irrespective of what skill set he's currently owns. I'm forcing him to do like front-end development, testing, and so on. So that's
good. And any other thoughts from the panelists around what students need to do, junior developers need to do around making sure that they are still relevant? Pushla,
I think to look at positive side of things, irrespective of whether they are studying in university or even, you know, school these days, AI is accelerating the learning process. So this could be relevant for both junior developers and things like that. For example, if you are a junior developer who's working with AI and then pipelines and things like that, if you give a third-year engineering student good access to Claude, ChatGPT Pro version and everything, and give him a deadline, 2-3 weeks, you have to learn kernel fusion. You're building LLM pipelines, you should know how advanced PyTorch works, how Torch Dynamo works, how do you internally analyze graph breaks, how do you do this. These are advanced stuff. But you give a third-year engineering student good access to all cutting-edge tools, 3 weeks time, he will still be able to do it. That's the amount of acceleration which AI brings in. And in my personal journey, if you see, I have been predominantly the last 10 years working only in the AI space. But last year, I had a requirement where I had to build a full stack desktop application, not even web application. See, web application itself is difficult, but if you build a desktop application, so I'm like zero in desktop side. But I've been like 3-4 months into the development, I've been able to put together a demo for a client which can be shown as a proper demo using Electron and all that. So the learning acceleration is phenomenal when it comes to AI. Of course, it has its lot of flaws and the other challenges and all that. But I really appreciate the acceleration which AI brings to the table. You take whether AI space, cutting edge, advanced PyTorch, or this side, you know, AI developer being able to do desktop development. I think 3 years back in 2024, if you are desktop development, I would have 3 kilometers away. But now I'm confident to break energy life cycle. That's the acceleration which AI brings into learning.
My advice would be, look, use AI like crazy to find out what it does well. If it's doing something well, stop learning that. Nobody's going to hire you for that. Where it breaks, use AI to learn that. That way you'll be building a skill. And keep doing this regularly because it keeps changing.
And that actually brings me to the next topic around your commit to release cycle, which is typically part of the HDFC process or what the HDFC process is also. Right? So say for example, we are ingesting AI into the process. Say Copilot writes or it fixes a bug, right? From a Jira interface, from a Jira interface. Who owns the commit? Does the AI own the commit? Will the developer own the commit?
So it's the developer who is delegating to the agent owns the commit because it's his responsibility to ensure it is functionally accurate, and he needs to take the accountability of ensuring it, it is what the requirement says and it is, let's say, not introducing any regression or whatever. Right? So from that point of view, it is still the developer's responsibility. He's instructing the agents or delegating to the agents, and then he, like, though AI agents are still doing the code review, maybe at the final review still needs to be done, at least in the current state of the AI maturity, but that could change over a period of time.
It's largely about how do we assign responsibility and control. Humans, we know how to do that. 4 centuries ago, we learned how to do that for companies. We also do that for gods, rivers, ships. These are all legal precedents where you can actually hold them accountable by law. We haven't yet learned how to do it for agents, but it would be a fun exercise to figure that out. See, what if, personally, I create an agency? And I am in fact doing that for exploring it with Times of India, where I am saying, look, I'll give you 5 journalist agents. They will write your articles for you. And these 5 agents have names. So Matsya, who is the first one, has written an article, will get feedback, that feedback will improve, blah, blah, blah. But I'm still at the end of the day accountable. But what if I could figure out some kind of an incentive system so that based on that feedback, they will want to improve. Already they are very eager to please. So steering them is not a problem. Can we assign some kind of control mechanism telling them, look, if you do well and you're able to get in these directions, then I will let you survive. The rest of you die. Not that they mind dying, they're just agents. But it almost, how shall I put it, creates an ecology rather than an accountability. I may still end up needing to be accountable, just like the board of directors probably still have to be accountable for a company. But we may be able to create something like a limited liability corporation with a pool of agents, and still give them a significant chunk of accountability while being able to trust them, because they are going to be so bloody cheap.
So, you talked about accountability, and typically racing matrices are something that are part of the project management itself, right? So, would we argue that we would never have agents responsible? We would only have them either accountable or consulted or informed, but
never is a long time, and I would
at
say
some point of time, yes, but today, as of now,
not responsible.
Not responsible. Yeah. Not enough. Yeah. And if there are code review stuff, for example, or if the PR counts or release gates, changing, how are they changing for your teams by inducing AI into the process? Are you doing commits faster, or do you see that they don't even have to do it, they are just monitoring it, and they are no more the authors, they are just someone who are monitoring the commits?
Yeah, so in we have been doing this adoption in many of our client implementations, and every project has a different level of maturity, but the most mature ones are like the AI, they delegate the agents, a specific feature implementation, and then once the feature is implemented, the PR is created. And in the process, if there are any clarifications required, the agents probe for that, and then someone who is accountable is actually providing the clarifications. That's first step. And then once the PR is created, the person is going and reviewing it. Though the first line of review is again done by the agent, but the final review still needs to be done by the individual developer who's one issue of that. And he's also ensuring the functional accuracy of that. Like, though you have these different AI agents, like one is ensuring the functional accuracy and second is ensuring the technical accuracy, but there is still a developer who is actually validating it from a business requirement standpoint. So that's the process that we are seeing, and it's still evolving. Like I said, right, every client and every project has a different stage of maturity. The most mature ones are actually currently doing, like, AI agents are executing everything in silos and then creating a PR, and then the developer is actually taking the ownership and then reviewing it and then approving it and going forward with the release.
So if there is a company or a team out there, and this is a question for everyone, would you recommend them to start off using AI in SDLC as a green field or start learning from the brown field and get better visibility, or vice versa?
I think greenfield is the easier target. Like, we have seen it works well in greenfield implementations, but brownfield, you need to actually do a lot of groundwork and establish the workflows so that it actually produces a better outcome. Because in brownfield scenarios, what we have seen is like the earlier options actually failed and they're not really producing the right kind of a result. So then we have to go back and review our entire workflows and define redefine that process, and it also requires some mindset shift from the developers as well. We can't do the same way they're doing it in the past, just the way they're delivering. So that's also another thing.
New stuff has less competition, less preconceptions.
And so we are moving from AI as a co-pilot, Tushar, the question for you, and moving to AI as an autonomous agent, right? How ready do you think teams are to make that paradigm shift? I know some advanced teams are already making that paradigm shift as we speak, but how ready do you think we are? Would you be comfortable handing over agents and making them responsible or accountable for their SDLC process if you are handling a team?
With brownfield systems, although I don't have expertise building like Lakshman and Anand, the brownfield system side of things, even in greenfield, which I operate, in the model which I operate, I wouldn't give the complete control, because from my personal experience, there are a lot of challenges in certain use cases. For example, we are working with NVIDIA CUDA libraries, like now, or NVIDIA agentic AI libraries like the NeMo, or you know, there are all these type of libraries. These are not used by common developers, these are used by very elite developers, production level system scaling like Netflix and all these things. So the amount of knowledge which is available externally for the LLM to be trained on is very limited. This is one example. Or you take a banking system like Canada, they use programming language called P24. So the amount of external knowledge which is available for this programming language is very limited. So of course, like in very sensitive domains, whether it is greenfield or brownfield, like handing over complete control is very difficult. And even in my personal experience of working with certain NVIDIA things like that, I find hallucination rate, in spite of using the best bytecoding tools available and agentic tools available out there, I find the hallucination rate is so high that if I have to do it from scratch, it would have taken me half the time, you know, fixing and rebuilding the code, putting things in. For certain areas where there are hallucination rates which are very high and it's still not very good. But there are certain areas of development where it's extremely good. So having more complete control, I would say, if I were to hire engineers and stuff, I would still have them go through these courses and design interviews, coding rounds, and all of this is still limited, because I might use it as an assistant kind of thing here. And that is at this point of time in 2026. I would still use it as an assistant for very critical applications and stuff, but not hand it over completely. So this is my thought process.
I would strongly underline in 2026.
And so, one last question. What is the biggest blocker to have AI as part of SDLC? Is it the people?
Yeah.
It's the people. It's their
it's our not willing to include that as a part of
it. I am a coder. If AI is going to do my code, what am I?
What am I going to do? Any final thoughts from all of you? Maybe I'm starting with your final thoughts on what should we do or what should we not do for AI in SQLs?
The world is moving forward so fast that I think one of the biggest gaps we face is not being able to plan extrapolating into the future. We are making all of our plans knowing the current state, and that is hard enough to find out where we are today, what is the state of the world. And therefore the plan that we make, which we lay out for a year, is outdated in a quarter and we are having trouble. So what I would do is extrapolate things for a year and put it in a safe pocket somewhere, where once things get to that stage, we will be able to take from that process and learn from it. Which means that we need safe ways of giving autonomy to agents.
Guardrails.
Maybe, yeah, well, not guardrails. Guardrails is about making them safe, and that is hard. If I could put guardrails and get it to work, I would put it in production. I would say, get it to a stage, try them out in spaces where when it fails, it's okay. I have a continuous publication of comics from news. When it hallucinates, it is a feature. Exactly. So in that case, I can discover 10 things, 20 things that it can do, which will be useful tomorrow. And when I can then say, actually, now it has to align with this particular style, or this has to be the format, it cannot do, you know, weird, sensitive comics and all of that. At that point, I will put it into production, but I know what it can and cannot do. So having a safe space where hallucinations are not a problem and running with it, I think, is one way of being able to anticipate the future. And there are many more. But the core thing, I think, is to plan for where we'll be a year from now than where we are now.
Yeah, I echo with Arman's comment, and think experimenting in the safe areas is the best way to start this adoption. And that will give you at least a feedback of, okay, where it will go, where it is likely to fail, and then you can identify those failure points and then try to mitigate them, or at least come up with alternative solutions as well. And whether we like it or not, this is going to be the norm, and it is already become kind of a norm in a lot of organizations already. I spoke to some customers who question our numbers, like, let's say, if I say, okay, realistically, it is 30%, they're questioning, like, is it like 30%, or is it 50%, or 80%, and all that. So whether we like it or not, it's a norm. So I think we, as a engineering people, need to evolve and then start adopting it, and then see what are the safe areas that I can adopt it, and where I get more value out of that, and then start with those, and then identify how you can improve it.
Before Usha, I think one thing that I would like to share with the group is, I think there was an instance where it was recently in the newspaper where one of the consulting companies were asked to pay back money that they had saved by using AI, by their client saying that, hey, you used AI and you had saved it, but they're still charging us X amount, but you saved 30% of it, I get that money back. So I think the costing model for companies when they're working with clients also is probably
It's happening. Yeah, I'm a friend of that being a consultant. Currently, I'm charging the same rates what I was charging in 2020-2024. But the time is running out. I'm quite aware of it and anticipating it anytime in the next 1.5 years or so. And my final thoughts would be use the current system of development, AI, where it is for code. Like, look at the positive side of things. There are a lot of things which it can accelerate your learning and even uncharted areas. Personal experience, there are certain areas which, 2 years back, I would never touch it. I would have the fear of even just having discussions around it. But now my mind has opened up. You give me any topic, even something like HPC and all that, configuring Slurm and all these things. I was just doing a small mini demo. These are areas which I couldn't even imagine 2 years back. Now you give me, I'm very confident with AI that I can pull it off. So there's a lot of positive side of things. definitely you can use it for accelerating development, initially most recent, and there's a lot of research areas in the intersection of the SDLC, AI and SDLC coming up, like the core context engineering, how the challenges in building a lab and debugging. I was exploring these research areas for the cybersecurity client of mine, where I had to build an agentic system for resolving code vulnerabilities kind of thing. So they're very interesting research areas. So as students, as professionals, if you're looking for research areas, these are like good research topics to pick up and solve these existing challenges. And before I wind up, I'm so happy to be here in Hyderabad. I'm associated with PyCon Hyderabad for a really long time in PyCon India as well. I would like to take a moment to appreciate the organizers, the chair, Kalyan. Snehit is part of the organizing team, Sanchit, Bhushan, and all of this, and many more in the organizing team as well. I really appreciate the amount of, I'm a community organizer, I lead communities for an iPhone city. And so I know the effort which it takes to organize conference and doing it consistently for 7 years, keeping the community alive. And PyCon community in Hyderabad is one of the most active Python developers community in the world. I travel across the globe to give keynotes in PyCon. So I can say all of the hats off to all the organizing committee and give them a round of applause for doing this.
Thank you for that. So so I would probably like to sign off with one thing, right? So when we were discussing yesterday, Anand had given one idea. We should probably also have AI as one of the panelists, right? We'll try to do that, but I was afraid that probably AI would take over my job as a moderator. So we tried to do that, but we said, okay, we'll probably put it for next time.
That's why I stopped inviting it as a co-host. It was stealing the show.
Exactly. All right, so thank you so much, all panelists. Please give a big round of applause for all of the time for the night. Thank you so much.
Thank you to all the panel members, and I request them to please be on stage. I request Kalyan and Sanchit and Sneh to please be on the stage.
Thank you for
the invitation. Can we have a big round of applause?